The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Clouds on the ground before the baby's birth. Sage all around this piece of earth. The mother inside works hard and deep while the world in restful slumber keeps. Potters wear sweat in the pyre where first the sacred ground adore with humble sacrifice of corn.
Welcome to Thought Crime Radio, Voices for the Human Rights of Babies. I'm Janelle, and I'm in the studio here with Rich, and we're in downtown Columbia, Missouri, coming to you from KOPN 89.5.
And our phones don't work, so we have no guests today. So we're going to have to interview each other, I guess.
Yeah, the phones have been out all day. We just found out a couple of hours ago, so we're going to be winging it. And you know how that goes if you listen to our show when we get a chance to rant and rave. We love it.
We're so opinionated. We have so many harebrained ideas.
Although I am really, really, really disappointed that we don't get to have our guest on today. And I'm going to tease everyone and tell you about her anyway, because we're going to hopefully get her on next week or the week after that. Her name is Maggie McCary Laird. And she's a feminist author and a Methodist minister. And she is the author of a book called Wise Women's Children, Birthing the New Age. And that's a book that's going to be coming out in a few months. Her website is wisewomenschildren.com, I think. And she's a healer, spiritual healer. She and her women's group in her Methodist church in New York were doing amazing circles and people were being healed, and they were accused of being witches. This is in the year 2000 in the United States, in New York. She was accused of being a witch, and to this day that label follows her. Her church had a trial of sorts and divided the church. She had death threats against her, and she wrote this book last year after a decade of really processing it all. And prior to that, I know a lot about her because she's my sister.
Oh, by the way.
By the way. Prior to that, she was going to write a book about, and this is just perfect for your questions that you've been talking about, the hatred of women and the history of that. She was going to write a book about the early church and the scriptures about women, and then this happened to her, and the book is finished and coming out, And it's an amazing book, and we were going to have her on to talk about that whole history of why it is. She's going to answer Rich's burning questions about why does society, why do humans seem to hate women?
Yeah, it seems to be very deeply seated. It doesn't seem to even spring from institutional biases. It seems as though, our guest from several weeks ago, the Russian midwife,
Elena Tanetti.
Yeah, she had just returned from touring Asia, and she said no matter where she went, even among women, there was a disdain for the feminine, and really some kind of gut level feeling. The only thing I can figure is it's got to be something that's happens early in life. And
Rich and I have been talking about this for weeks, yeah, mulling this over. Now you'll just get to be privy to our thinking about
theorizing.
Our theorizing.
It seems to me, I can't interview, bonobo monkeys or something, but the only thing that I can think of that could produce such a deep-seated emotional revulsion would have to be something pre-verbal, something very pre-verbal, and something practically universal, considering how predominant it is in society. And the only thing I can think of is the way that human beings are born.
Well, most of who we are and how we feel and how we see the world is pre-verbal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the safety and nurturing and wantedness and nourishment, those are all established in the early primal period during gestation, conception.
It would be interesting to know how monkeys, we are primates after all, and whenever these types of questions arise, I always try to go back to to where we come from. And it would be certainly...
Adam and Eve?
No. Well, I thought we came from the pages of the Bible.
Well, we have to include all beliefs.
Okay. Well, we also come from primates. We come from monkeys. At least at some... We are related to monkeys. How about that? We'll put it that way. Something like...
I wish people could see you do your monkey imitation right now.
it's a good thing it's a radio show. Anyway, it would be worth knowing. I mean... I have done some research on YouTube, for what it's worth.
Very scientific,
yes,
and non-objective.
Right. Well, watching monkeys give birth. There's lots of videos out there about birth, and some of them deal with animals. And there is no monkey midwife present that I have seen. And there's no monkey, dog midwife or cat midwife. It's all just the mother and the baby. And if there's a father around at all, he's patrolling the perimeter.
Well, there are different classes of mammals, and we're a little bit different in that our brains are bigger because we're smarter.
Are we?
So having a big head is actually part of the issue when women are giving birth. Because traditionally women have had support. I mean, if you look at old pictures from Egyptian... writings, and in the 1400s, women were surrounded by women. In fact, in doing the research for the show and reading some of the stuff, it was like in the 13th century when medicine and religion sort of got together. Before that, they weren't getting along too well. Mm. And prior to that, even through the 1400s, when women were attended by doctors, the doctors never did any checking. Women were often clothed, in civilized
right.
situations. But women have always had women. I mean, historically, there's like all kinds of primitive.
Yeah, but you're talking about historical knowledge, right? I mean, that only goes back as far as the beginning of the written word. So I mean,
not really. Not when you see the statues. From very primitive times where women are supporting women. It's kind of interesting.
Hmm. I don't know. I just have to wonder, you know, our culture has so warped our idea of who we are that I'm just trying my best to avoid recorded history and try to go back to physiology. And
trying to unwarp.
Yeah, trying to unwarp. And, you know, babies' heads are very pliable. You know, the skull plates don't calcify and, you know, don't mend together, stick together until after birth. And prior to that...
Well, those of us who are cranial sacral therapists know that the brain, the bones never do fuse, like they say.
Oh, okay.
In Europe, the doctors know that, but in this country, they don't know that.
I see.
Even your bones are not fused.
I can't believe that. I have such a hard head, you would not believe it.
It means that you can still be moved.
So I can put my head in a vise and change my ideas about the world, do you think?
Possibly.
Hmm.
If you really wanted to, do you want to do that?
No. I don't think so.
That's what we're trying to do, though. We're trying to unwarp from actually having our heads in a vise.
So
my head was in a vise, man. I had forceps.
Oh, yeah.
I was born by forceps.
Most of us probably have dealt with that. Or vacuum extraction. I'm not sure which is worse.
But back to the mammals, you know, the human being also is unlike a lot of mammals. You mentioned the ape. And the dog and the cat,
mm-hmm.
Those animals are not as helpless. They're actually further developed. They develop more in the womb, so it doesn't take very long.
See, this doesn't make any sense to me, though.
It takes 6 weeks, 8 weeks,
yeah.
Or whatever for a dog to be mature. But a human is totally helpless and defenseless, and it has to rely upon the mother to survive.
Well, I know we're different, but I mean, it just seems counterintuitive to me that nature hasn't figured this stuff out by itself.
I think nature has figured it out. We just keep messing with it.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is whether, you know, midwives even have a place in an ideal birth. You know, there's a website out there, unassisted childbirth, unassistedbirth.com, I believe it is. Stories of women who just went off in a quiet place by themselves and did it just all by themselves.
It's very rare.
Well, my question is whether the presence of other people, you know, intervening in the process.
Well, there's a balance between having people that intervene and people who are present with you and support you. But there are a lot of women who are doing birth unassisted with either just themselves or with their husband, and there's a lot of risk to that.
But even...
And not very many women can do that. You know, what is it, the bell curve that shows us what's normal?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the women who absolutely need a cesarean or they would die,
mm-hmm.
and the baby would die, are in that, on one end.
Mm-hmm.
And the women who can do birth with absolutely no assistance, nobody around, are on the other. And then as you get towards the middle, you know, the majority of people are going to be, like,
mm-hmm.
within... standard deviation of 10 or something, but and then there's a number of women who who have a cesarean that it was better for her and it's better for the baby,
yeah.
than to go through
through
trauma. And then
sure.
on the other end, there are women who they just need somebody there to support them in some way. But then the majority of women need a caring, skilled caregiver who knows birth, because birth is it's natural, but it has complications. And I think part of it is because we've evolved into...
But you understand why I'm asking this question. I'm asking it because, you know, where is this gut-level hatred of the feminine coming from? And, you know, we all during this show, we've been talking about, you know, for the past many months, talking about the... importance of the imprint at birth. And you know, there is something that most of us have in common, and not just in this society, but all over the world. Two things, apparently. One is this hatred of the feminine, and the other is the idea of assisted childbirth. And you know, you were talking about the caregiver stealing the gaze, you know, having the baby imprint someone, a stranger's face. Having the baby imprint a stranger's face. So, you know, does this somehow, you know, I mean, it certainly in the case of a traumatic birth.
What I've talked about is that women are wounded. We have a history over and over and over and over and over of women being wounded. Mm-hmm. And it's the assisted birth that you're talking about, even in hospitals today, it's even in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s when it was predominantly men are doctors and women are nurses, it's women who drugged, who shaved, who gave enemas, who refused, who followed the rules of the establishment that you can't have water, you have to be on your back, you have to be drugged, you can't have food, so that a woman, by the time birth happens, is very disempowered. It's and it's the women, it's the nurses who take the baby away from. Right. Well, you're talking about ancient, and I'm talking about.
No, I'm just trying to again. I'm trying to find the mechanism by which this imprint. Presumably, I'm hypothesizing here that it's some kind of imprint, and certainly it's easy to see in the case of a traumatic birth, or you know.
I was answering your question about the gaze.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes folks winging it is not easy.
Yes, yes. Well,
because I was saying that it's women who take babies away from other women and insist on them having their cords clamped, who insist on touching them, cleaning them, putting hats on them, taking them away to measure them for the male-dominated system.
I would argue this is not a male-dominated system. This is an institutionally dominated system, which is mediated by both men and women.
And that's what I've talked about.
They call it a patriarchy, but there's nothing inherently advantageous for men to being circumcised or you know having to go off and fight wars in distant lands. You know, it's not clear. You know, when people say the word patriarchy, it's not obvious to me who, you know, no one is benefiting from this. Men are not benefiting. You know, individuals who climb the pyramid of power and, you know, generate massive fortunes off the backs of others benefit from this. But, you know, it's still an institutional, intergenerational institutional issue here. You know, people are not born evil, at least as far as I know. They just are born into systems which condition them to behave in a certain way, and the things, the social behaviors that are perpetuated are the, you know, behaviors that the system selects for. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, that's a distraction, sort of. So, you know, where do you think this pervasive misogyny comes from?
Well, I was saying that it's women who take the baby away. It's the women who this happens to over and over. They go into the work of midwifery or nursing or doulas or doctoring in obstetrics, and they're not, most of them, I would say a majority of them, have not really even thought about their own experience as a baby, and they probably haven't even really thought that much about their own experience as a woman giving birth, and they go into these situations working with women, and they perpetuate it or recapitulate their own trauma again. And I think there's a huge issue with people wanting to take people's babies, hold people's babies. But when you watch it in the hospital setting, it's really quite, to me, it's really someone who's so aware of the baby. It's quite alarming actually to see. And I've had doctors. Dr. Fishbein, who was with us a few months ago in January, he, in my interview with him for my film, he talked about how he does delayed cord clamping at a cesarean, and the nurses are just like chomping to get that baby, and he's like, no, he just waits. Mm-hmm. And another physician told me that she started not cord clamping as she was researching it, not quite sure that she was totally believing what she was learning that was opposing her training, but enough to know that it was safe. The reason she started delaying cord clamping is because it was the only way as a physician that she could get the nurses to leave the baby in the mother's arms. Yeah. And the core of humanity is the mother-child relationship. I was talking about the mammals, where human beings are different from a lot of the mammals because we are totally helpless when we're born, and we have to rely upon our caregiver, our mother, and we have to be appealing to her. We have to cry. We have to communicate with her, and she has to be responsive to us. Mm-hmm. And when that bond is disrupted at birth, we create little glitches in the system. But I think that happens. This is something I've been talking with you about and kind of mulling around, is how women are doing this unconsciously. They're taking, like, trying to glom onto other women's babies, and they're doing to other women what was done to them. And I was reading about, oh gosh, who was it? The guy who worked with Bowlby, I think his name was Jackson. He and his wife did some films in the 60s, and they filmed a 2-year-old being separated from her mother while she was having surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And then they filmed some others. I lost my train of thought. I was going somewhere with that. Don't look at me, say something. I was trying to connect all these dots. You know, that's what I like to do on this show.
If you missed out on.
I like to connect the dots, and I just lost a dot.
Well, it just, you know, something...
It'll come back to
something
me.
Something important needs to be explored here. That's all I know. You know, we've been...
Oh, I know what it was.
Okay.
One of their films, they showed... this was back in the day when you took your child to the hospital, and your child wasn't allowed to visit you if you were in the hospital, and you only got to visit your child. They filmed this one child. She was in there for 8 days, and the parents just got to visit her. They were filming her, and it was really traumatic. And this guy is a psychiatrist who's connected all this early imprinting to psychiatric disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 50s, for crying out loud.
Right.
So they showed this film to hospital personnel, doctors and nurses. And at first they were mad, because people are always mad when they're confronted with visual proof of the consequence of your actions.
Apparently
it's
still
not it's not a scientific research, but you know, if you get angry, that's a sign that this is impacting you. But anyway, this one woman said the first baby that she cared for in the hospital, who was angry and crying and crying and crying, broke her heart. And she never saw it again until she saw it in the film, which was her way of saying she shut down and she didn't see the human baby in front of her anymore, or the grieving baby or the grieving mother. When the hospital policy said your child is in the hospital and you could only visit 1 hour a day or whatever it was.
Right. So the way it impacts the caregiver just hardens them to the situation.
Yeah, so when you...
Makes it even worse for the baby.
When you're going through nursing school or medical residency and your first experiences, you go, oh my God, I can't handle this. And then if you're going to continue, you have to shut down and you don't see it anymore. You don't see the pain that's inflicted on the being by the help that you're giving them.
All that baby needs is its mother, you know. There is no reason in the world why a baby and a mother should be separated. Period.
Well, that's all that they want. And anything that is done in the hospital for the safety and the well-being and the life-saving of the baby and the mother can be done consciously and kindly and slowed down and with reverence for this is a human being. This is two human beings, probably three or more human beings when you have mother, baby, and father. And they are sacred beings.
They're all imprinting this experience. You know.
Yeah.
This is all.
But that's I'm trying to answer your question. I think that's part of why they keep taking babies away from other women, is they're trying to get something, and there's something so
trying to compensate for their own experience.
So luscious. Anybody who goes to birth, the home births, and sees how beautiful the energy is of a mother giving birth, they want that. women are trying to get something for themselves, and I don't know how far that goes back. We'll have to have Maggie on in a few weeks, and she can talk about the history, because it's very important to look at the history of the church and medicine and how they've resisted each other and fought each other and interwoven. And
now they're just a mutual network of corruption, it seems to me. You know, look at what's happening with the Catholic Church, for instance.
What?
Pedophilia, you know? But it's not just religion. It's virtually all of our institutions.
Well, one of the things that Maggie, she's probably listening and just chomping at the bit.
No doubt.
Sorry. She was going to talk about the role of celibacy and how that impacted. In fact, I am going to read this one. You remember the book that you gave me? Well, you didn't really give it to me, but I still have it. The American Way of Birth.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that book that you found?
Yeah.
And I borrowed and never returned.
Right. Thanks for reminding me of that.
I don't even check out books from the library hardly, because I always want to keep them. But I'll let you look at it sometime.
Oh, thank you.
The American Way of Birth by Jessica Mitford. So this is right from her book, and Maggie also talked about this same publication.
And this is what, 1960?
This is 1994.
Oh, okay.
Midwives, from the earliest days, the traditional attendants at childbirth, were in for very rough times during the late Middle Ages. The major impetus for their persecution was the publication, circa 1484, of the Malleus Maleficarum, Farcrum, in German. In English, that means the hammer of witches, by two German Dominican monks, Henrik Kramer and Jacob Springer. Its message was enhanced with a prefatory bull issued by Pope Innocent VIII, who delegated Kramer and Springer as inquisitors throughout northern Germany. Furthermore, the Malleus, as required reading for all Roman judges and magistrates, had a large built-in captive readership, what today's publishing industry would consider an author's dream deal. Because it was required by everybody, it came, everybody had it. So here's a quote from this book that went out to anybody Catholic in power. In part one, the question was, why is it that women are chiefly addicted to evil superstitions? And they answered, let us now chiefly consider women, and first, why this kind of perfidy is found more in fragile a sex than in men, specifically with regard to midwives who surpass all others in wickedness. And then they say, all wickedness is but little to the wickedness of a woman. What else is a woman but a foe to friendship, an inescapable punishment, a necessary evil, a natural temptation, a desirable calamity, a domestic danger, a delectable detriment, they're very poetic, an evil nature painted with fair colors. The root of all women's vices is avarice. When a woman thinks alone, she thinks evil. And then part two went on to talk about the spells that witches cast, and let's see, in part two they describe tortures that are appropriate at different stages of interrogation, and how to secure a confession. And it said that the inquisitor in charge could secure the suspect, this is a quote, in fetters and iron chains, if seems good to him, and in this matter, we leave the conduct of the affair to his own conscience. So, Maggie was telling me just this afternoon that within 2 years, well, first of all, this spread out through Germany. This gave them license to kill women and midwives and anyone that they believed were spiritual, the herbalists, the healers, and prior to that, that was women's role throughout the community and the family. She was considered the physician in her family. So it spread through Spain and France and then eventually into England. But Maggie told me today that within 2 years, that's when the church declared that priests were to be celibate. And so we are going to talk about that connection when she comes on, which is, oh, he's thinking.
Well, I'm just...
Isn't that amazing?
Well, it's...
In the 1400s.
Yeah, and so how much is that still coloring our culture? Quite a bit, it seems to me.
Well, yeah, the whole issue, you were talking about the...
But it still doesn't explain why Asians, Chinese or Thai people, don't like women either.
Do they don't?
Yeah, that's what Elena said. I mean, she had just returned from a tour of Asia.
So.
And she found the same issue. Maybe it's religion in general. It seems to me religion.
I was just going to say you could almost blame religion.
Well, it seems to me religion derives a great deal of energy by. Putting a wall between the sexes. You know, the if you want to control a population and derive, you know, power over a population, you know, and get large numbers of people to build pyramids to your glory and things like that, one of the first things you need to do is put a wedge between people. That's really... The foundation of social control, it seems to me, is the necessity for keeping people from relating to each other and reaching their social potential to cooperate and to love and have a good time, be neighbors, find their common ground. And act in unison. This type of social behavior is anathema to centralized control, and so it seems to me that a mega religion, a religion which would presume to dominate large numbers of people, one of the biggest obstacles to that objective is the man-woman. Relationship, and just the way it acts as a bridge between people in general, creates this love bond that can be extrapolated to others. Not necessarily in the physical sense, but in the emotional sense. It acts as a bridge between people, which lowers the threshold, lowers the barrier. In establishing close relationships with your neighbors and friends. So, it seems to me that it's very interesting that religion derives such power, such energy from people by doing this very thing, by at least the European religions have... denigrated sex and women in this way, and they do derive power from this. It seems to me. I don't think it's necessarily an accident. Is this a conspiracy? I don't know. It's just the way things turned out. I think it creates a feedback loop where belief systems that survive in an evolutionary sense. In our Darwinian natural selection type sense, these are the ones that can extract the most useful energy from the people that it can, the people that are organized under that religion. So, yeah, I think religion is a big part of the problem. I mean, the spiritual aspect of male-female relationships. Is a direct obstacle to religion's function as a spiritual as an access to spiritual fulfillment, right? Don't you think? You got to agree with me now.
What did you say?
Oh, God!
Can you recap that for our listeners?
Well, they were listening. You weren't. She was shuffling through papers here and trying to figure things out. I'm just saying that at least Western religions, the ones that I'm familiar with, tend to denigrate women and tend to denigrate sex. And I think it's more than it's not a coincidence that in doing so, they redirect people's emotional and spiritual energies to the religion itself by blocking interpersonal relationships.
Now, you mentioned China and other countries in the East saying that they also do that, that they denigrate women.
According to Elena, yeah.
So you were saying that you think that's because of the Western religion?
No. I'm just hypothesizing that it might be a general property of spiritual belief, large-scale spiritual belief systems, i.e. religions.
Still a burning question, though.
Yes, it is.
How is it that...
We have to figure this out, people.
You know, I think it's because women are actually...
Inferior?
I was going to say something else, but the opposite of that. But I wasn't going to use the inferior or superior word.
I was joking. What were you going to say?
Well, you know, women are the givers of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, women... Women are.
This is why this doesn't make any sense.
Super beings. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that this would happen.
I mean, look at the things that we know of nature, the physiological things you were talking about, physiological natural birth, the things that we know that create healthy beings. Just for example, breastfeeding, how in a very few short years breastfeeding was so out of vogue, and you were. So negligent and so uncool if you didn't bottle feed, because the big belief in the 50s and 60s was that the formula is better. You know, so now we know every day more and more information about breastfeeding. Like, women who are breastfeeding, they are superwoman. That is a superpower. It's a superpower that you can build a baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I totally honor that it takes a sperm and an egg in that relationship. But, you know, maybe Freud's penis envy was way off and it's actually uterus envy.
I think that's manifest in medicine, yeah. I think there are a lot of doctors that wish they could give, you know, a lot of male doctors that wish they could give birth.
And I've known some enlightened men who have, and they're usually older, but they admit that when their wife was giving birth and breastfeeding, they really yearned to be able to feed the baby that way. Because you know what? If a woman walks into a room, a strange room, her body will sense that, and her body will begin to make antibodies or whatever for the baby's milk. I mean, if you think about, like, the whole conception, gestation, to me, is just a miracle. I'll never cease to be amazed by that, where, like, my body made four human beings. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to go, oh, darn, today was 18. I was supposed to get the heart pumping. Mm-hmm. And day 42, oh, gosh. Okay, remind me tomorrow, Rich, because it's day 42, and I have to connect the brain and the nervous system, okay? Don't let me forget, because...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if it was left up to our thinking part of the brain, we would make huge messes. But that part, that early part of the brain that is primal and that knows how to do all these things, functions without us knowing it. And, like, just the, I mean, you know, I was just at a birth 3 weeks ago, which is why I wasn't here. Just amazing. It's just amazing that to watch that process in a beautiful, supportive setting when a woman is just in her glory, and this woman is in her glory. She is a goddess. Like, just going with that, all the natural stuff, you know, not needing the man and the drugs, all of that stuff. Once you see that, you see it. You go, what in the world is this that we're doing? Once you see a natural birth, you know, like you talk about the monkeys and the... I mean, when you see a woman who has nourished this baby, built this baby, built another human being, and she's birthing this baby onto the planet. And you, when you see that done with beauty and grace, you just, that's why there's so many people now, as natural birth and home birth is coming back, are just like, so, should I say, fanatic? Like, because you just, oh, it's like, I don't know what.
It's very empowering.
Yeah, but, you know, like, that's a power.
It is.
And I don't know, is that sort of a natural thing between the male and the female, that there's an envy of that they can't do that? And
I don't know. I just
it would be interesting, because I found it interesting that men, again, of some age and mellowing, would say, you know, I really wish that I could do that and see that, you know, that experience, the bonding and giving life to a baby and nurturing it. Because all a woman needs is some good nourishment, some support, safe environment, and she can make milk that will grow that baby in a way that nothing else works.
Yeah.
So I think...
No need for fluoride supplements?
Mm-mm. Or immunizations.
Oh, no, we need to immunize. We can't forget the shots. We have to do the shots.
I wish we had a baby-centered society where everything we did, we would consider, how is this going to impact a birthing, a woman who's pregnant, and women who want to conceive, and how is this going to affect babies that are born if we do this? Because our gross national product has to do with buying products, so because of that, women have to leave their babies at home, put them in child care, and child care is not considered important or worthy in our society unless you're getting paid to care for someone else's children.
Mm.
Caring for your own doesn't seem to be valued yet.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I wish we had a society that valued that. I should play that song, Dream, Dream. How's that go? Some music right now would be good to back that up. Anyway, I think that it's uterus envy.
Maybe you're right. So you wanted to talk about the Mother's Act.
I did.
You said you mentioned the Mother's Act.
You sent me something about it.
Yeah. So the Mother's Act is a
Are we done talking about how wonderful women are, Rich? And how amazing their bodies are?
No, we can talk about that if you want.
Too bad the phones aren't
but we aren't
working. I'd have people call in and tell me what they think of the idea of uterus envy.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear from guys to say, they could do it anonymously and say, yeah, you know what? I really wish I could breastfeed. Because that is amazing.
It is. And that's why this pervasive hatred of the feminine is so strange.
What if we put that in a positive? Because, you know, as long as we have the war on drugs, the war on terror, the war on poverty,
war on cancer. War on children.
America goes after everything as if everything's a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the war on child abuse. What if, instead of talking about domestic violence and child abuse, my colleague and I wrote the Safe Baby Resolution, which talked about what we do want.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we want? If we don't want to have children and babies separated and mistreated in this most primal, vulnerable place, which also harms the father, if we don't want to have violence, if we don't want to have hatred of women, how can we create a new paradigm, a new mindset to put out there? This is what we do want.
I think the first thing we need to do is leave the mother and baby alone for some period of time after birth.
But what can we call it in a positive? Instead of female hatred. And Do you know what I'm getting at?
No.
It's about putting it into terms about what we do want.
Yeah, right.
Well, we don't want women I don't want to hate women. I don't want to be angry at other women. I don't want other women angry at me. I don't want you to hate women. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be hated by men.
Yeah.
But as long as I keep using that language, I'm still putting that out there. What?
It's so hard to disentangle all this from the... It's hard to disentangle the psychology and the emotion from the... You know, the written language and the institutions and...
But it starts within each individual to start to say, I'm going to create what I do want. I'm going to create the positive.
To some degree, this is going to necessitate... I mean, anyone that wants to do this is going to have to set themselves apart from the dominant, you know, the dominant paradigms, the dominant society.
I know what that would look like.
Maybe you've
been there, done that.
Go off and live on a mountain somewhere. I don't know.
Well, I think it starts in your own mind, in your own imprinting, to begin to look at what you do want. And we all want, as you said, babies want to be in their mother's arms. They want to be wanted and supported and nurtured and nourished. We need to birth, we're birthing a new age. But it's going to come from...
Is that the New World Order?
It could be. Instead of all this chaos and calamity, you know, we could just create a peaceful society.
That would be nice.
But I think if you start healing your own feelings about being a mother, being a wounded mother, your own feelings about your mother who was wounded... When you really shift to see what is it that I really want, then you can start to work towards that with your mother, whether she's here or not. You can do that within your own system. I'm just trying to provide the balance here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree that we need to be...
Like woman love or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we need to start a...
Mother love?
We need to start...
What's wrong with mother love, you know?
It's been used...
But everybody has a mother, you know. It's right there. It's
everybody
intuitive.
Has a mother within them, whether or not they have a mother who uh-huh. gave them what they needed when they needed it, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That mother is within you, and you can heal that, and we can start to honor the mother within us.
Mm-hmm.
I just try to focus on what I do want and the positive. So I thought I would just throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really interesting to look at all the history, and we'll do that when Maggie does manage to make it on with us. But then what do we do with the history? How do we not repeat the history? How do we stop this insanity of women harming women? Now women are harming men. Women are so angry.
Everybody's angry. Men are angry. Men have been angry for a long time.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what? Peter Cook, I think, says that anger is just is the frustration, is love frustrated. Love is really the only thing. And if you're angry and guilt and whatever those negative emotions are, they're just a sign that there's something going on there that needs to be fixed, that needs to be healed. And it all goes back to the mother, which is why we have such mother guilt and so much anger at mothers. But you know what? I want to say this. I want to say it really loud that I can't yell on the air.
Okay.
That the air conditioning came on. I lost my train of thought again. I got so wound up being silly.
Oh, my.
I was talking about Lord of Mercy. It was important.
I heard someone say an interesting thing the other day. Unexpressed or unarticulated love is the pain that we bring into the next life.
If you believe in previous lives. Hey, I'm just trying to provide the balance here. I'm not saying what I believe or don't believe in. I'm just like when you say something, I'm just providing the balance.
I'm going to have to say that I know that there's something beyond this life. I just it's not a matter of hypothesizing. I have direct experience, but in any case.
But say it again. So what? It's like unfinished business is what we come into the next life with.
Unexpressed love is the pain that we bring into the next life.
But isn't that why we're all here, is to find and experience and be and provide love?
I think that's right, yeah. I think that's the fulfillment of our life energy. I really do.
It's so important that I can't remember it.
Uh-oh.
What I was going to say, that's so funny.
Are these things to read?
Yeah, we're going to be running out of time soon. And we need to do some public service announcements.
Okay. You want me to read this?
Sure.
The 9th Annual Mayor's Challenge Bike, Walk, and Wheel Week will begin with a kickoff event at Flat Branch Park on Saturday, May 1st from 1 to 4 p.m. Bike, Walk, and Wheel Week is designed to encourage Colombians to explore modes of transportation other than cars. What?
Sorry.
What did I do? The website at www.getaboutcolombia.com will have registration info and a long list of the events planned for the week.
Something just struck me funny. Sorry. It was the Wheel Week, like Elmer Fudd.
Wheel Week. Okay. I get it.
If you need an attorney on a civil matter, on a more serious note now, and are low income, you may be eligible for help from Mid-Missouri Legal Services. Matters for assistance may include domestic relations, landlord-tenant issues, welfare, unemployment, Medicaid, and more. More information is at 442-0116 or toll-free at 1-800-568-4931.
My turn.
It's been 40 years since the first Earth Day, back in 1970. Colombia's 2010 Earth Day Festival, celebrating 40 years growing green, will be held Sunday, April 25th, noon until 7 in MU's Peace Park and on the adjacent streets in downtown Colombia. KOPN, as part of the Earth Day Coalition, invites our listeners to participate in this historic anniversary event, free and open to all. Details available at 573-875-0539 or www.columbiaearthday.org. The rain date is Sunday, May 2nd.
Cool. So our blog is www.thought.
It's just thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com.
It is www.
Maybe that'll work. I don't know. I never use it.
That's because...
I haven't figured these things out.
thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com. And if I remember that really earth-shattering important thing that I was going to say, I'll put it on the blog, because I know I will afterwards.
There's a lot of other stuff there, too. There's even stuff that has nothing to do with birth. There's a link to my blog at the Columbia Tribune website.
Mm.
Which
now everybody knows who that is.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble. And actually, there's something totally unrelated to what we've been talking about I could talk about, if you want.
Well, we're almost out of time, and we also don't have our usual music with us, so I'm going to replay the song that I played at the beginning, which is a song by a local Missouri woman. Her name is Lucy Myers, and she's from Rolla, Missouri. I ran into her, met her, at one of my hangouts here in Columbia, the Main Squeeze, great place. And we got to talking, and she shared her music with me. I'm going to play that again at the end.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready for me.
Should I go ahead?
I don't know what it is, so okay. Don't look at me for approval.
Well,
because I'm running the board today, so I'll cut the mic if I don't like it.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to mention on a totally different topic. There's a guy named Alan Sabrowski, Dr. Alan Sabrowski. He's the former director of strategic studies at the U.S. Army War College. Okay. And he's been going around giving interviews on the net for a couple of weeks now, talking about how the Pentagon knows that 9/11 was a false flag operation.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm going to play the second song by this woman because it's about war. So go ahead.
Okay.
Just to tell people.
So, you know, whether or not you've caught on to this fact or not, the Pentagon apparently thinks that it was a false flag operation. And if you've paid any attention to these things at all, you would have come to this conclusion a long time ago. So what does this mean? It means that whoever pulled off this false flag knows that they're being pushed into a corner. And they're obviously very powerful, whoever they are. I think it's interesting that the Patriot Act was waiting in the wings, ready to be signed into law before 9/11. It didn't stand a chance, of course, of getting passed until 9/11 happened. And also the Effective Death Penalty Act that was passed in the mid-90s didn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of passing until the Oklahoma City bombing. And if you go on the net and do a Google on video.google.com, if you Google the words OKC bombing rare, A-R-A-R-E, OKC bombing rare, you'll find a video which is nothing but local news feeds, television news feeds from Oklahoma City on that day that clearly show that there were bombs that were found in the basement of the Murrah Federal Building that were removed by the bomb squads. They were duds. They were high explosives, military-grade type explosives that were removed from the basement of the Oklahoma City Federal Building. And if you do another Google for WTC bombing rare, you will find out, you will see Dan Rather on the CBS Evening News telling you that the explosives for the World Trade Center bombing in 93 were supplied by an FBI informant who was under the full control of his FBI handler. And now I see that John McCain has introduced a bill called the Enemy Belligerence Act, which would provide for the arrest and enhanced interrogation of American citizens as terrorists. And there have been a number of provocateured events directed against certain domestic political dissident groups. So I think it's something to keep your eyes open for.
Alrighty. Well, that's the thought crime part of the show, right?
And if you don't think that this country has a big problem with misplaced trust and authority, the men out there, all you need to do is look between your legs, okay, and ask yourself how this could have happened, you know? What kind of mind control could have induced your parents to subject you to this kind of brutality?
Because they were subjected to it. So that's the show for today. Thank you for joining us here on Thought Crime Radio. We're the voices for the human rights of baby. And keeping with Rich's ending, I'm going to play this song by Lucy Meyer. And it's about a soldier coming home. She gave it to me since my son has been deployed. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the Tech Guys coming up at 6. Your time.